on January the 19th, 2014, from 1pm to 7pm in the UBC Sub Ballroom. This event is planned in order to help Dance Horizons in providing affordable dance classes and creating a welcoming dance community for everyone. Also, part of the proceeds will go to the UBC Red Cross to support Children of War. This is sponsored by CITR.
Hello and welcome, and you're tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, and here we are on Skald's Hall, and we have with us today Cale Judy. Say hello, Cale.
Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, Cale, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a Vancouver resident. Recently retransplanted here from London. I was living there in the UK the first half of last year. Yeah, and I'm a writer, and you know, I'm just getting the word out there. Involved with a great group called Wolf Mountain Writing Collective. I co-founded with my buddy Dave, and I just love Vancouver. Love being a part of the community here, and just trying to get some good quality poetry out there.
Yes, and we've talked about the Wolf Mountain Group here on Skald's Hall in weeks past. You're also an alumni of here, aren't you?
I am, yes. Of CITR even as well. I went through the training course here and was close to pitching my own show, but I ultimately did not.
I see. Well, welcome back at any rate. So you're a writer, Cale.
I like to think so, yes.
Well, how did you get started off on that in life?
Well, should we go way back to the primordial beginnings?
I think so. It'll help some of our budding writers out there to hear stories like this.
Well, it's one of those, it's funny because it's one of those things when I hear people talk about how they got involved with the artistic pursuits, and it's one of those things that when I hear people who are successful at something say that they were into it from, you know, a young age, I'm always like, oh, how did you know at such a young age that you, this was the thing you enjoyed? But I must admit for myself, like, writing was something I gravitated towards when I was really young. I got a typewriter for Christmas when I was 9 years old, and that was in part because I loved the Peanuts comic strip, Charlie Brown and Snoopy, and Snoopy was always typing away, so I wanted a typewriter to write some stories down. And so it was something I always gravitated to, but I, and even to this day still, I always struggled with sitting down to write something longer, more substantial. Still do have a short attention span. It was something that I always found a challenge, but it was something I was drawn to. And I can also relate to, I've had a number of interests that I've had pursued in different avenues, but writing has always been the one I've come back to. And it's where I've sort of planted my roots, if you will, now.
I see. So what kind of writing projects do you do then?
Well, currently, over the last couple of years, it's been a real fruitful time. Basically have self-published 4 books. It's 2 chapbooks and then 2 more proper books. And the last one I did through the Wolf Mountain Writing Collective. We did a 4-book set called Wolf Mountain Presents, and then it focused on 4 of kind of the core members in our group. But yeah, it's so basically I've been involved with doing a lot of sort of more short form narrative poetry. I guess I would say I do enjoy poetry, but even as someone who has a writing collective that primarily writes poetry, I don't. It's one of those things that you would think would be more. Maybe it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on this, but I find it's funny that in our day and age, poetry isn't consumed more, because I feel like in a more of a short attention span culture where we only have 5 minutes to read something between transit trips or, you know, waiting in line or something you can pull up on your phone, you'd think poetry would have a larger audience than it does now, but it's something that people still, I find, have to really work to gravitate towards, or it's something they really seek out and they have to really want to be passionate about it. But so involved in some poetry in the last few years has been really great, and then I've also written a short film over the last year that I'm working on with a producer right now, and then I'm also getting started on a novella that we could talk about a bit, but it's in the very early stages, so I'm trying to get that going. But yeah, but mainly I would say short narrative poetry has been the sort of the game of choice the last while.
I see. Well, I might not be the best person to ask about poetry, but I do know from a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Kedrick James, that poetry does indeed have a very limited audience in the modern world. He talks about how even the most successful of Vancouver poets often are happy to get 500 print runs of their work.
Oh, yeah. Like even a guy like, you know, Bill Bissett.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah.
He's, I'm not sure how many books he's, I know he's done many books, but I don't even now, I mean, he's been published since, I think, the 70s, and he's still, yeah, it's one of those things where it's, yeah, I'm sure if he got a 500, you know, print run, that'd be big, but, yeah, it's definitely something that you don't do for, you're not going to make a living being a poet these days, that's for sure.
Hmm, that's true indeed. So, you're working on a screenplay.
Yeah, yeah, it was a, I don't know, I've always been a very sort of intense dreamer, I guess. Like, I'm one of those people, it's not like when I hit the pillow, it's not like I have 12 hours of sort of black static and then I wake up and then I just go on my day. It's like I've always dreamed very intensely and very vividly, and I can remember snippets of my dreams usually each morning, but it's strange. It's something that I've had kind of my whole life, but sort of over the last year and a half, I've been working on this. I was inspired by the scene in, I'm sure you've seen Mulholland Drive.
Yes.
You know the scene in Mulholland Drive where there's the two characters who are in the sort of the diner, and then the one character is talking about, I can't remember their names, but he's describing this dream he's had, this nightmare, where he sees this sort of creature behind, you know, this trash bin, and then they go out and they actually see it. And it's just this weird, really creepy, really surreal scene. Sort of like a lot of the stuff he did on Twin Peaks, but I'm a big David Lynch fan, but I'm not like a studier of him, but I just appreciate his work and his aesthetic, but I was always, that scene's always really stuck out of my mind as something that I find just really interesting, like why is it so creepy and why, it almost has this dreamlike quality to it, you know, where he's like literally describing the dream, but then it's sort of like the feelings of it ebb into the real life, and I was sort of drawn to that, and so I wrote a short film script basically drawn on some of my own dreams and incorporating that into the story of basically a protagonist whose dreams are sort of bleeding into his real life and vice versa. And it's it's been interesting. It's been challenging to write. Screenwriting is a very different medium from trying to write more prose or poetry. It's got its own unique mechanisms and trying to make stuff fit. It's interesting, but it's been fun, and I've been working with a local filmmaker on, he's been giving me notes, and yeah, it's going all right. So
right, yes, I think that it really must be a challenge. I mean, I know that the written word, for example, is a very different challenge to write than a medium that's primarily visual, and the end product of a film is primarily a visual medium, and so knowing how to write for that is almost a more of an indirect process, I think, than trying to write something that is going to be a text as an end product. And by text, I mean a printed text, a text in the sense that we as a society define the term.
It's like trying to, like, you know, when you're writing, you know, a poem or a short story or what have you, you're drawing on really creating strong imagery in the mind of your reader. Whereas when you're doing something like for a screenplay, you're literally crafting the imagery that they're going to be seeing, but you have to create, you know, a scene where you can't describe from either a third person or a first person perspective what the person's thinking or feeling. You have to show that. So it draws on different skills in terms of just trying to communicate something. But so it's definitely, I think even in the script writing process, it's helpful to have it be collaborative, just because, you know, if you're trying to communicate something, it's helpful to have people's feedback early on.
Mm-hmm. And are you collaborating with anyone right now?
No, not really. I kind of have my main writing partner is David Edward Kenny, who's the other kind of half of Wolf Mountain, like the sort of the co-founder with me. We share a lot of work together. We have a monthly writing club that meets at the end of each month through Wolf Mountain, and so we have, you know, young budding writers come out, and we meet at the Main on it's Main and 25th or 6th. It's up there. It's past King Ed. I'd just Google it. But we meet there the last Monday of every month around 8. And you know, if anyone's listening, if you want to come check it out, feel free. But other than sort of sharing work there, I basically bounce ideas off him, and my brother and sister are also quite accomplished writers, so we sort of share things. But primarily, yeah, I'm trying to just generate some content for this novella currently. But yeah, not really working on anything. Actually, no. Sorry, that's not true. I totally slipped my mind. I am actually doing a collaborative project that's more photography-based, but I'm doing it with a couple local guys. This one photographer, Dave Delnia, and this architect, Brendan Callender, and we're in the process of developing the project now, but it's going to be similar to, I don't know if you mentioned the Main Street Trail project that we did through Wolf Mountain, but Main Street Trail was a project that we did this last, in 2012, in the summer, early fall, where we basically got a grant to do this poetry installation up Main Street in Vancouver, and we did... So far, we've done 9 poems, and we basically spray-painted them on the sides of different buildings. A couple are inside. The idea is you kind of go, and you seek them out as you kind of walk up the street. And so I was chatting with this guy, Brendan. We'd met through a mutual friend, and he was actually working on this project with Dave Delnia. And then they asked me to come in and help them work on sort of the content for this photography project. So it's still taking form now, but that's been really fun to kind of, and so basically through the Main Street Show project, and they had been inspired from some things they've seen on the East Side Culture Crawl, so we're sort of working on that right now. So it'll be fun to see how that develops. But yeah, definitely having other people involved with a project kind of keeps me producing, because I find if it's just me, it's easy to, you know, like with anyone who's trying to do something creative, be it film or photography or art or anything, you have to sit down and do. You know, there's like that resistance that kind of pushes you, that keeps you from really wanting to do it. You're like, maybe I should do some laundry, or I'll make myself a sandwich or something. It's just like these little things, but it's so, like, when you just to sit down and do it can be a challenge. But I find when you are working with other people, or you have people holding you accountable, then it's that simple thing, but it really does help.
Right. Yeah. So you've mentioned Wolf Mountain a couple of times, and I've already mentioned it on weeks past on the show. How did that get started? I believe it's a story that kind of indirectly involves me as well.
Yeah. We were all in the same class together. You were in the class?
Yes.
This in the fall. Yeah.
Yes.
So the three of us, Brian, Dave, and I, were all in this writing class with the aforementioned Dr. Kedrick James. It's the fall of 2010. And Dave and myself... hit it off pretty early on. He was living nearby, and we actually found out we shared a lot of mutual friends from years past, and we ended up just sort of sitting in class and hammering ideas back and forth. And then at the end of that semester, we were basically discussing the idea of doing sort of a presentation in class, and there we were like, well, why don't we, you know, like do it, you know, take it off out of the classroom, let's do it like at the local pub on campus. So we did a show at the pub. It went great. We had some people performed in class, and some people did it at the pub, and it was great. We had a lot of fun, and sort of from that, the actual name Wolf Mountain didn't come until the following summer. Me and Dave were in another class with Dr. James, and we were basically brainstorming names. Dave came up with the name Wolf Mountain, and we did another show that June, actually on my birthday. And then we did a third show at the end of that summer, right after the program ended. And even then, though, we were trying to make it something more like, it wasn't just for people in the teaching program, but it was like, you know, people we knew who were doing writing or things like that, but creating a space just for people to share things they were working on. And that's sort of how it started. And yeah, basically from then, we just did a show, which Brian was at, in December. And I think that was our 8th show, I believe. But yeah, it's been really cool. But yeah, the genesis of it was in the UBC teaching program. So
yes. And just to fill in a couple of gaps for my listeners, Cal and I were in the Bachelor of Education program from 2010 to 2011.
Yeah. An intensive 12-month process.
Yes. Which anyone can go out and look up if you're interested in. Yes. So... do you have anything you would like to share with us today?
Yeah, I have a couple pieces I'd be happy to share. I brought a copy of my book from our latest sort of Wolf Mountain series, and it's sort of basically an amalgamation of all the work I sort of did in the last year and a bit. So there's a couple selections from the first book when we were young, a couple from my second book, Red Sparrows in the Telephone Box, and then a couple from my third one, which was a split chapbook with Dave Kenny, called My Half was called American Baseball. And and so it's broken up into two halves of the book. The first half is called Bergen Sienna Hills, which is more of an Americana sort of kind of bad boy outlaw vibe, which is sort of the Americana thing is something I'm really drawn to. Just my background is all from the States. My dad grew up in Southern California. My mom grew up in New England. So I've always been drawn to the States and sort of the history there and the feel of sort of like more old-time America, like old diners and sort of, I don't know, something about the plains and just, I don't know, there's a history there and an aesthetic that I really like. And then the second half is called Skull Grounds, which I borrowed from The Wasp Factory by Ian Banks. But it's more of a horror kind of fantasy vibe. So I thought I'd read something from each section.
All right, so when we come back here at CITR 101.9 on Skull's Hall, we will have Kale Judy giving us a couple of interesting readings.
Has mental illness or addiction touched your life? You might be interested in coming out to the Kaleidoscope, UBC's first and only student-created, peer-run mental health support group at the university's Vancouver campus. They offer a stigma-free place for people to share their stories with others going through similar experiences. The Kaleidoscope meets every week on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. at the Center for Student Involvement in Brock Hall.
Learn more at the-kaleidoscope.com.
All right, so welcome back to us here at CITR 101.9 FM, and we have Kale Judy with some readings. Take it away, Kale.
All right, thank you, Brian. So this first piece is called Stone Rose. It's from my book, Wolf Mountain Presents Kale Judy, and it's from the first section, Burn Sienna Hills, Stone Rose. I gave my love a stone rose. It was cold and beautiful. She planted the rose in a concrete lot in a New York City slum. I would hold my love's hand and tell her how beautiful she was. She would smile and whisper in my ear, her voice spiced with secrets, grown in a garden behind her eyes. We lived in the heart of Brooklyn, above a soul food diner. We could see the river from the rooftop. During the summer, we would sit on the roof and bask in the heat. We smoked cigarettes and listened to Marvin Gaye, High in the Friendly Sky. Sometimes my love would ask about the stone rose. Did you find it in a pawn shop? Was it abandoned in a dark alley? No. I sang a 10-story love song to a gypsy in Central Park. She began to cry and showed me her belongings. She kept them in a burlap sack tied to her back. Why did she cry? She had never heard such a beautiful song. That's a lie. You can't sing. It's a story. Let me finish. She offered me fool's gold, but I refused. She offered to read my palm and tell me when I was going to die. I declined. She showed me the rose. She said it was the best she could offer and told me to give it to my love. And so I did. That's very sweet. It's the truth. I still don't believe you. That's okay. I held my love close, telling her secrets from a world only I could see, a world beneath the city streets where myth and legend run rampant, like wild things. It's sad. Even when things seem perfect, they can shatter under the weight of perfection. Like a dismantled angel wing, I would find her hair in strange places after she left. Long, thin strands of yellow in the corners of my bedroom. You took my copy of Catcher in the Rye. I wish you'd asked. It belonged to my father in high school, and it had sentimental value to me. So.
Thank you very much, Kale. I remember you reading that at the get-together I went to in December, and it was very beautiful.
Thank you, yeah. One thing I try and do generally is have for the live readings is have try and pick some appropriate music behind it. So it's almost funny reading it without the music. It's like, but yeah, thanks. I know that was one I wrote actually a few years ago. And it was weird because
go ahead.
I'll talk about the background of it. It was one I had written right before I had started dating, like I'd say the one probably the one serious love of my life so far. And I had written it right when we had first started sort of spending time together, and it had quite a happy end to it. The ending was different. And then during the time when we were actually dating, she read it, and she was like, you know, I don't think the ending should be so happy. It feels like it has more of a somber end. And so I actually wrote an end for it that was what is basically currently there. And it was weird because that actually became, that weirdly became actually what happened in real life when things ended not so well. And so it's one that I hold, has a very bittersweet sort of appreciation for me, because it was one I was happy with that I wrote a while back, but then having it tied into, you know, sort of personal circumstances always gives it a little extra edge. But yeah, but I've always been quite drawn to that one. And that one was actually, that was one of my first published pieces. I think that was my second published piece of poetry that was published in the first issue of White Rabbit Quarterly, which was a local sort of literary publication that is now defunct, but it was a good little magazine for the time it was around. Yeah, so I'm going to read another one from this section. And, yeah, I think I've been quite drawn to sort of Westerns and, yeah, just, this is actually, if you're familiar at all with the movie Unforgiven, this is basically a creative synopsis of the first half of the film, but I was really, I really love that movie, and it really bumps me out that Clint Eastwood has kind of gone a little crazy in his old age, but I think he's a wonderful director and a wonderful actor, whatever his political leanings might be. But this is one I wrote based on Unforgiven, and it's called Big Whiskey. Thunder rolled over Big Whiskey, the Wyoming sky filled with rain, and Mama Wyatt's whorehouse was full of blood. The cowboy with the tiny pecker cut the whore with his hunting knife. She had laughed when he pulled down his pants, so he pulled out his knife and slashed her face 5 times. They were deep, thick cuts. Certainly, she would never work again. He escaped out the window and was pursued by a few of the town's men. The rest thought it was too much bother over a whore. The other girls pooled their savings together, hidden in secret places, and put a bounty on the cowboy with the tiny pecker. The man who was hired for the job had seen blood before, and he would see it again before the task was through, and the whore with the ruined face would have her satisfaction. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a fairly powerful and succinct synopsis of the first half of that movie.
Are you a fan of that movie? Brian?
Oh, definitely, yes. It is by far my favorite Western. Growing up, my grandfather was of the generation who would watch movies by Steve McQueen and John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. And I grew up watching the Westerns that were prevalent in the 60s. And I was in high school myself when Unforgiven first came out. And I remembered winning the Oscar. And I remembered really being engrossed by this one more so than I was the ones that had come out when my grandparents were younger, just because of how real everything felt. And I know it's an illusion because it's a film, it's verisimilitude, but still, it had, I think, a more lasting effect on me than the other Westerns from a previous generation, just because the mindset behind creating it was very different.
It really subverts what you expect out of a Western, which is, it's funny, you can watch that having seen all, you know, Sergio Leone's films, or you can not have seen any, but it still really, it hits you in a pretty powerful way. It's a cool, it's a great film. So yeah, so I guess to read a couple more, I'm going to read, it's called the Black River Trilogy, so if I can indulge you in listening to sort of a three-parter, but it's, this one was cool, I was really happy with how these turned out. This was based on a series of paintings. The artist was Martin Whitfooth, and I just came across his work online, and I was just blown away because he had these really incredible paintings of this kind of post-apocalyptic imagery of just these animals in different, you know, forms of distress, and they were really violent and but weirdly beautiful in a really dark way, and I was just really drawn to the imagery, and I just felt like, wow, like I picked a bunch, and then I just tried to write something for each one, just to kind of inspired by the really provocative imagery of what he was doing. And sort of on my mind, I thought it'd be really cool to maybe one day we'll do a, you know, coffee table book and the paintings and some poetry. Could be fun. Martin, if you're listening, talk to me. Hit me up on the emails. But yeah, so I called. So I put three poems based on those paintings in here, and I called them the Black River Trilogy. And the first one is called White Dog. And if you're interested in checking out his work, just Google him, and you'll find him. Just go to his website, and you can check out his stuff. But yeah, so White Dog. The river burns scarlet, black oil twisting its fingers over the surface. The coast burned orange, every tin roof lodging lit up like a jack-o'-lantern. The white dog approached the river with the red-flecked coat, greasy muzzle, face full of reckoning. He drank from the river with a steady gaze on the approaching fire, streaking across the surface, a red stick of lightning. Still, he kept his mouth to the water. He lifted his head, eyes soot black, a hellhound with a kingdom all his own, his crown a ring of fire. And the second one is called Odin's Bowl. The black clouds billow over the harbor, smokestacks in the horizon feeding them gently from the tit of their fire bellies. Surrounded by tired earth, dusty, knuckle bloody dry, cracked in a thousand places. In a small pool of gray water, thick like mercury, sits a wounded tree, roots stretching into the earth like skeleton hands. A tire swing hangs from a crooked limb, forgotten, watching the heavens burn with unholy fire. Odin's bowl, its thick hide covered in grease, strains against the ropes binding it to the tree, wrapped around the bull's thick thighs, belly, and broad, glorious back. White spears protrude from its hide, all aflame at the tips, a slaughterhouse celebration, a festival for the damned. Its head is lowered to the water, but it does not drink. It sees the flames on the horizon and prays for redemption by fire. And the third one is called The Horse and the Monkey King. Waving a red dress from the top of an old commuter bus, the monkeys call their brothers to Tolliver Square, where they have found a sacrifice worthy of their master. The horse, terrified, is unable to pass, seeing only tiny furred creatures at every turn. It rears on its hind legs, trying to exaggerate its already enormous size. But the monkeys will not be dissuaded. They scamper up the horse's back, carrying a red jerry can. They beckon for the hot coals as they drench the horse's mane with fuel. They ignite a long stick and set the horse alight. Excited by the screams, they are joined by more of their brothers, as the horse shrieks like a human child. All agree, the king will be pleased. That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Cale.
Yeah.
So, how can our listeners out there get a hold of your work if they'd be so interested in doing so?
Well, if they are so interested in doing so, there are a couple ways. I would say currently the best way is to visit Project Space, which is in Chinatown here in Vancouver. They have copies of all of my books, except Me and Dave's chapbook. They might actually even have that, but yeah, they should have copies of all of my books. along with the set of Wolf Mountain books that came out in October. As well, I would say currently the best way would just be to hop on the old Facebooks and just follow Wolf Mountain, and we do sell our books at our shows. We are working on a new website, and that should be up in the next few months. And from there, you'll actually be able to buy all of our stuff online. But currently, the best way would be to either visit Project Space or come out to one of our shows. And our next show is in the development stages right now. And we're looking at a late March, early April 2013 show. So that'll be coming up the next few months. And we'll be sure to let you know, so you can let your listeners know when that date does arrive. But I'd say that would be the best way. As well, you can check me out online. I have a Tumblr. I don't know. Blog. Is it just me or does blog just sound? Just the word sounds so bad. I think it's a bad sounding word.
It's a word that we commonly use here at CITR. A blog. Tumblrs, I think, are just Tumblrs, though.
They're just Tumblrs. It's not. I guess I don't really have a blog. I have a Tumblr. I do have a Twitter. I Twitter sometimes, but it's not really. It's mainly just what I was on my Tumblr. But my Tumblr is sort of a running visual representation of kind of what's going on in my brain. And if you just actually Google me, you'll see some of my other stuff come up from a few online publications, and my writing portfolio is behance.com/kljudy. But honestly, I would say just check out my Tumblr, and I have links to sort of all my stuff online from there. But I'm actually working on a personal website as well, which should be done fairly soon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say Project Space, hit up Wolf Mountain on Facebook, and then check out my Tumblr if you want to find out my stuff.
Yes, and if there were any up-and-coming artists in the area who would want to contact you about possibly being in one of your shows, can they do so?
Definitely. I would say that the best way to just get in touch with us is come out to a writing club, because then not only do we get a chance to meet you, but it also gives you a chance to share your work. And we're always looking for new voices, and I'm just sort of looking for the right fit for whatever show we're doing. We try to have it based around theme. So I'd say come out, and then I would love to meet you and check out your work, and we'll figure out a way to get you involved.
All right, so that's Kale Judy here with us at Skull Toe on CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you very much for coming down.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Great to be here.
Did you know that UBC hosts the largest student-led conference in North America? It's called the Student Leadership Conference, and it's happening on Saturday, January 11th, 2014. Learn about how students, staff, faculty, alumni, and community partners are coming together from around the world to be infinite. Register today at slc.ubc.ca.
Arch Oblers. Lights out, everybody. It is later than you think. Turn out your lights now. Some of you may not know this, but beneath many of our cities, there's a subworld, not only of subways, but sub-sub-basements and man-made caverns where little trains run and deliver the goods to the department stores and the factories of our industrial complex. Today, we're going to some of those sub-sub-basements in a play I've written for you titled Sub-Basement.
But of course I can run an elevator.
I was just asking.
And I told you. Well, here we are. All right. All right, are you getting out?
I suppose so.
Suppose so. For 10 years, that's all I've heard. Where do you work? What do you do? Why don't you let me see you?
Don't get angry.
Oh, I'm not angry. I'm just telling you. Come on, this way.
It's a big basement.
You don't know the half of it. Like a whole city down here.
A person goes to a department store and doesn't know all this is underneath.
Say that again.
And you're in charge of everything down here?
That's another fact. Here. Look at these.
What are they? Furnaces?
Oil burning. Heats and air conditions, the whole building up above. 20 stories.
But where is everybody?
Nothing but a watchman at this hour of the night. Everything's shut down.
Help!
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
What did you do that for?
Oh, I just wanted to hear my voice. It's like a big cave down here.
Yelling out like that. Won't you ever grow up?
Don't be angry on me.
All right, come on.
Yes, honey.
Come on, in here.
Another elevator?
Well, you want to see everything, don't you?
Yes, I do. Down some more?
Yeah. All right.
Another basement.
Yeah. Go ahead. Plenty of light to see behind.
What's down here?
Come on over here. I'll show you. There, in the wall.
Is it a tunnel?
That's what it is.
But a tunnel down here?
See those tracks?
Oh, yes. Where do they go?
How do you think all the merchandise is brought to all the stores here in the business section? Tunnel system, that's how. Right under the city streets.
I had no idea.
Mighty few people have. Trains run on those tracks, bring the stuff right in.
Trains? Oh, Arnie.
You think all I've got to do is make jokes? You think the only kind of a train's a big one?
Well, I just don't know.
These are little ones. They run on electric batteries, just like they have down in the mines. Come on, I'll show you.
Where?
In the tunnel.
But it's so dark.
There are lights every little ways. Come on.
I don't think so.
What's the matter with you?
I'm afraid.
Oh, for John's sake. For years you've pestered me and pestered me to see. You come along, Emma, you understand?
All right. Arnie, this is far enough.
Oh, for John's sake. What's the matter with you now?
I don't know.
Come on, there's one of the little engines parked down at the end of the tunnel. You might as well see it. Well, keep walking.
I think I'd like
down to... Down this way. You'll see the train.
Yes, but Arnie, the light... Arnie, where are you?
Right here.
What's the matter?
Matter?
Oh, why are you standing so close to me?
I'm your husband.
Oh, Arnie, don't be silly.
Emma, I'm going to tell you something.
Arnie, what's the matter with
you? Listen to me for the last time.
Last time? Arnie, what's the matter with you?
Do you know that you can't get out of here?
What?
You can't get out of here.
Arnie, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Oh, Arnie, you haven't made a joke like that in years. The last time you tried to scare me was right after we were married, remember? With that fur piece you made off was a dead animal that had gotten in the bedroom. You remember?
I remember. Come along further, Emma.
Oh, sir. As long as I know what you're up to, I don't mind. How far are we going?
A long way.
All right, Arnie. Anything you say.
Don't I know it. All right.
All right, what?
This is as far as we're going.
Oh. I feel funny. I've never been under the ground so far in so long. It was very nice of you, Arnie, to take me down here. So interesting. Very nice of you. Arnie, why don't you say something? Arnie, is something the matter? Arnie, really, you can't frighten me. Not now, you know. Arnie, are we waiting for someone? If we are, I think I hear him.
Hear him?
Well, yes, don't you?
No.
But I heard someone.
Tell you there's no one down here.
All right. All right, if you say so, Arnie.
If I say so, can't you say something else but that even now?
Now?
Yes. Irma, I'm going...
There, I heard it again.
What?
Are there trains running this late at night?
Trains?
If it's a train, we ought to get out of here. Tunnel's so narrow, Arnie, please.
Shut up. Let me listen.
Hear it?
Will you shut up? Who's there? Who's there?
Isn't there supposed to be anyone?
Oh, of course not. I saw to it. Is that you? Is that you, Tom?
Who's Tom?
Tom, are you down here?
One of the watchmen.
I told him I'd pull his boxes tonight. I told him. Tom! Hey, Tom!
What's wrong?
Tom, what's the matter with you? Come on out here. Do you hear me? Come out right away or I'm firing you. Tom!
Is he playing jokes, too?
That fool, I'll break his neck. Get my hands on that.
No, Arnie, don't leave me. Arnie, where did you go? Arnie, it's so dark, the tunnel. Arnie, where are you?
Oh.
Arnold, was that you? Arnold, it is you. Did you cry out? What?
Stay back.
You? That man? Who?
From what's left of his face, I think it's Tom.
What? What happened? The train ran over him? Arnold, answer me, was it?
Train? No. Something's torn out his throat. Come on. Gotta get out of here.
Oh, yes.
Something down here.
Arnie, Arnie, wait, I can't
please.
Go so fast.
Police, I'll get the police.
Please, Arnie, wait for me. Arnie, what's the matter? Arnie, why are you just standing here? Why don't you open the door?
Door wasn't closed before.
Well, open it.
It won't open! All right. We'll be there in a minute.
But are you sure?
I tell you, it's an emergency exit. It's always kept open.
Why was that door locked?
Stop asking me that. I don't know.
And that watchman?
Stop talking, will you? I don't know anything.
Arnie, why did you stop talking? And why stop? You said the emergency exit.
That's it.
What?
Behind those timbers. It's blocked off. You understand? It's blocked off.
Well, what do? We can't just stand here. Arnold, that man was killed. There's someone down here, I'm afraid. Oh, Arnold, get me out of here.
Oh, wait a minute. I've got to think.
Think?
Oh, whoever killed Tom, not down here necessarily.
You don't think so, Arnold?
Well, why should he be? Nothing to steal down here. Tom is always borrowing money from people. Somebody... He didn't pay back. Yeah, that's it.
But the doors...
Oh, well, he got out and closed the doors. What of it? We can get out. Come on.
Where?
I told you, these tunnels lead to the buildings all over the business section. Follow the tunnel to the next sub-basement, to the next building. We'll get out, that's all.
Honey, don't get too far ahead of me.
Oh,
I'm...
just walk fast, will you?
Oh, honey, I look forward so very much to tonight. It had been so long since you'd even thought about me. I knew that. And tonight, when you called me up and told me to meet you here, and then when you started to play those crazy, scary jokes before, even then I...
Irma, you see it too?
Is it after us?
Don't talk. Run.
Oh, my side. It's hurting.
Oh, that's too bad.
Honey, don't leave me behind. Honey, I can't run any faster. Honey, wait.
Oh, oh.
Honey.
Oh.
Honey, what? Oh, honey. Oh, I'm going.
Oh.
Honey.
Oh.
What? Your leg.
Broken. It's broken.
Oh. Honey, come on. Hold on to me. We'll manage.
No, I
But you can't lie here. That thing.
It's coming.
I don't know. I can't see it.
There was a running rock under my foot.
Arnold, over here, a pile of boxes.
What?
Hide behind them. If I help you, could you go over there?
Yes, hide. Give me your arm.
Yes, I will. Hold on to me. Hold on to me. If you hold my arm tight. Come.
Get over there.
Come on. I'll help you.
Take it easy,
that's
will
it.
You?
That's it. We're getting there. Back here. There.
Oh. Now help me down.
Yes. Easy. Here you are.
God.
Oh, honey. There. Oh. 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 We'll be all right.
Can you see it?
No. No, it's gone.
Oh.
Just don't think about it, Arnie.
What was it? Emma, you hear me? What was it? You went to school. You studied things like that. That thing. What was it? Irma, didn't you hear me?
Yes. I heard you.
What was it? What was it? Was it a lizard? Yes. Some kind of a lizard. That's it. A lizard.
Some kind of a lizard.
Oh, why do you say it that way?
I thought good, Arnie.
Well?
In school, one of the books, there was an animal like that.
How did it get down here? A lizard that big?
Oh, no, you don't understand. Geology book. The thing wasn't a lizard, exactly.
Huh?
It was a dinosaur.
Are you crazy?
No. I'm telling you what I saw. It sort of sat up on its hind feet. Just like the picture in the book.
What are you trying to do? Make me crazy, too? Why, those things died millions of years ago.
Arnie, look.
Huh?
Way down the tunnel. By the light. It is a dinosaur.
But don't move!
Arnie, it is a dinosaur. Has it gone away?
I don't know.
It's been so long.
Just don't move.
It just looked at us.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it come after us? Why?
Maybe it didn't see us.
What?
Well, it was like something that had been in the dark for a long, long time.
Yes. Oh.
Don't move around.
Oh, there's a little room back here.
Oh, would you rather go out there?
Oh, don't be angry with me, Ernie.
Angry? Why should I be angry? Irma, you went to school. You studied those things. You called it a
dinosaur.
Yeah. All these hours, I've been thinking, how could a thing like that, which was supposed to have passed out of the world so many years ago, how could it be alive now?
I don't know.
Irma, listen, I know. This tunnel under the business district, they were putting on an extension, blasting in the rock. Maybe that thing came out from inside the earth.
Maybe.
You're not frightened, are you?
No.
Why not?
Because I'm with you.
If it came back, what could I do for you?
It's just being with you.
Yeah.
I keep thinking.
And what?
That poor watchman.
Yeah, it'll really be something when it's morning and everyone finds out about it.
What do you think they'll do?
They'll hunt it down. The police will get it soon enough.
Arnold.
Yeah?
Arnold, what if it won't be here then?
Huh?
It's been hours since we last saw it standing down there. What if it's gone back where it came from?
It's all right with me.
But what if they're not...
They'll hunt it down. They'll find it.
Arnold, what's that?
It's all right. Everything's all right.
But what was it?
6 o'clock. That was the bell back in the basement. The day engineer turned off one of the sprinkler alarms.
Oh. Oh, honey. Come on. Come on, I'll help you.
Wait.
But you said
wait.
There was...
Look. Over there. Back. It's back.
Help! 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 Help!
Don't! Don't! Right, he's looking right at us.
Oh. Well, they didn't hear us, but it did. It's starting this way.
Oh. My leg. Arnie.
Oh. How slowly. Moving. As if we can hardly see. That's it, Anna, that's it.
What?
It's blind. That thing's blind. It's lived under the earth so long it can't see.
But it's still coming this way. Oh, honey, come on.
I can't.
Hold on to me,
Let me alone. Go ahead.
No, try. I'll carry you.
You can't carry me.
I will.
Go ahead, Emma. Go ahead, I tell
you. I won't.
Go on. Don't stay here, I tell you. Go on.
Honey, please listen to me.
You stay here with me. I wanted to kill you tonight. You hear me? I brought you down here to kill you.
Oh, Arnie, no, you're only saying
you. I'm telling you the truth. I brought you down here to kill you.
No, Arnie, I'll stay with you.
Listen to me. I brought you down here to kill you. Now, that's the truth. Look at me and believe it because it's the truth.
That's why you...
That's why I suddenly got so wonderful. I was sick and tired of you. I was sick and tired of living. So I brought you down here to kill you and then kill myself.
Arnie.
Look at it out there. It's feeling its way along. Well, he'll take care of me, but you've got to get out of here, Anna.
No.
You've got to get out. I deserve to die, but Irma, not you. You're so blasted good. I guess that's why I got tired of you, but that's no reason for you to die. Irma, stop looking at me like that. You've got to get out. Run straight down the tunnel. Keep running and you'll get away. Irma, just don't look at me. Get going.
No, Arnold.
Why don't you say what you've always said to me all these years? Just as you say, Arnie, just as you say. Oh, Irma, will you get out of here?
How slowly it moves.
Irma!
It is blind.
Bless you, look, will you listen to me? Will you go? You've got to go, or they'll think I've killed you.
No, they won't, they
yes,
won't.
Yes, they will. I left a note back home for the police. I told them I had killed you. If that thing kills you and me, they'll still think I was the one who did it. Now, do you want me to be a murderer? Do you want that?
You left a note?
Yes, yes. Don't you remember I turned back after you went out the door on the dining room table? Irma, get out of here and get that note. Don't make them think I killed you and I didn't. And I don't want to. You're such a good... You're too good for me. And I was tired and I was crazy. Don't make me a murderer, Irma.
Arnie... Goodbye.
Goodbye? Yes, Emma. Yes, hurry. Run fast. Straight ahead. He won't get you, I promise.
Arnie.
Go. All right. You blind thing, you.
Here I am. Here I am. Here. I'm not scared. Come and get me.
Sometimes I think you're probably the finest ship ever to have sailed the Vortex.
Oh, I know, Doctor. This is the end of the world news.
So now we know. Now we know for sure.
But why are they?
I'm waiting for you.
Indeed we are, Doctor. Thursday mornings from 8 to 10 a.m.
And welcome back to us here at CITR 101.9 FM. I am Brian McDonald, and this is Scald's Hull. And we're coming up on to the end of our broadcast hour for that. Coming up next, we have Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam. So stay tuned for that. And on our show in the upcoming weeks, hopefully we will have new things to add. New people to interview. I know that there's a couple of people waiting in the wings who want to be on the show, so that's really cool. And I can't wait for that to happen. So hopefully it will soon, and I will see you next week.
Love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub.
It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Hi, this is Jennifer Farney, founder of Discorder, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.